Hey, Richie McCormack here from OTB's Rugby Daily. We'll keep you up to date throughout this year's Six Nations. So subscribe to Off The Ball Rugby and you can listen to Rugby Daily for free wherever you get your podcasts.
The Six Nations. Join in the obsession.
Football on Off The Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Champions League evening is continuing and no great shocks on the horizon, really. Bayern Munich were goal down, obviously, going into tonight's game in Munich against Lazio, but they are 2-0 up in the night and therefore 2-1 up on aggregate. Harry Kane and Thomas Muller just before the break with two goals for Bayern Munich. Second half's just getting underway. PSG, their way to Real Sociedad, they were already 2-0 up from the first leg. They're now 3-0 up on aggregate. Kylian Mbappe after 15 minutes. With the goal for PSG, Real Madrid bound perhaps, but scoring for PSG this evening. Later on, Martin Lipton, who covers football in London, will talk to us about contrasting fortunes for Chelsea and Arsenal just now. But we will start with Ireland's Euro 2025 qualifying group. Now, at the World Cup last year, Ireland had group death type deal. So we thought, well, maybe karma might owe them something a touch more benign for Euro 2025. And out came France, third in the world, England, fourth in the world, Sweden, fifth in the world. Best of luck, Ireland. Two thumbs up. Rachel O'Sullivan is with us from Girls on the Ball. Rachel, evening.
Good evening. How are you?
What the hell is going on here?
Honestly, I don't know what we've done to people. I thought everyone liked the Irish, but apparently not. We've managed to get possibly the hardest group out of all of them.
I mean, it's so bad, all you can do really is laugh, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the other groups and think maybe there'd be a bit of a chance. I mean, group two, Spain, Denmark, Belgium, Czechia, that's a difficult group as well. But there's no question that that France, England, Sweden, Republic of Ireland, 3, 4 and 5 in the world is just a bit mad. It's going to be a tough ask. I think I'm glad there's playoffs. I think there's a huge benefit of being in League A. It means that should Ireland come bottom of the table, their first playoff will be against a Group C team, two-legged playoff. And then I think there'll be one from a Group B team. So it could, if had Ireland stayed in Group B, it would have been arguably more difficult. So there is some silver linings, I suppose.
Yeah, I was looking at the Guardian website and just to like get a sense of where we rank in this group, it was no great surprise to see this. But the headline was Lionesses draw Sweden and France in group of death. Like, give us a mention in the headline for God's sake. So that really put things in perspective. But you've rightly said the playoffs here are guaranteed. And so that changes the complexion of this situation massively. I mean, if you want to, you know, be really one of those annoying glass half full, no matter what types. These are high level games against top level opposition, and there is still the massive safety net of the playoffs. So this can be spun in a relatively positive way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're in the big leagues now. It's what happens when you top your group, you win all your games. So, you know, there was never going to be an easy group. There was arguably a maybe potentially less difficult group, but it was always going to be difficult. So, yeah, I think the safety net's massive. I think the fact that Ireland are in League A means that the opposition they potentially face, should they end up in the playoffs, they should be able to win those games, and we should be able to feel more positive about who they potentially might come up against. I will say, should they win their, say they get to the playoffs and a lot of permutations here and win their C games, they'd end up playing against teams in League B, and potentially you've got Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales, yeah, each in their own groups there. So, you know, there could be even more interesting fixtures to come. I'm glad you pointed that out about The Guardian, because I'm good friends with the women's football editor at The Guardian. I'm going to have a word about that.
Well, I'm sure the argument will be a clunky headline, and, you know, we can only list it so many teams. So I suppose a couple of questions to ask. One about Eileen Gleeson, and in part, she was given the job on the back of those performances last year, which were against a lesser standard of opposition, and it was very much Ireland on the front foot. So now, you know, pragmatism is going to have to kick in here. Eileen Gleeson against these teams will have to set up Ireland in a certain way. And, you know, she may be borrowing, frankly, from the Vera Powell playbook.
Yeah, to an extent. I think what Group B allowed her to do was to try new things, to try new players, to try different styles, to allow the players to get comfortable in possession, to become more efficient in front of goal. You know, you're not going to get those kind of opportunities to practice when you're playing really high level opposition. So at least that's something that they were able to do with Group B. You know, it will help Ireland, should arguably they're not going to have as much possession in a lot of these games. And to have that Group B in their back pocket where they scored lots of goals, they were comfortable in games, will give them a little bit more confidence in those moments when they do get forward. So it's something that, you know, you can draw on, I suppose. But it is going to be, they are going to have to set up defensively. There's no kind of two ways about it. You know, we've obviously come up against Sweden before, didn't do too badly, lost 1-0 and then drew as well. So there will be, you know, there'll be games they'll be looking at thinking we could potentially nick a point here or there. But yeah, it is definitely a very different challenge for Eileen Gleeson to come up against. Look, they will be relishing it. There's no doubt about it. They want to play the best. And I think, just as you said, that safety net in the back of your mind will be useful for sure.
It's interesting, like that point you make, to tease that out, to what extent Ireland are a possession-based team. So, as you rightly say, against the lesser opposition before Christmas, they had lots of possession, they scored lots of goals, they won comfortably. People, for instance, would have watched the Wales game and they were distinctly shaky in possession. And actually, even trying to play out from the back, they gave up seriously good chances to Wales. So, you know, it didn't benefit them against Wales, that's for sure. I look at the team and you see a lot of great attributes, but maybe with the exception of Katie McCabe and Denise O'Sullivan and Jessu was really good that night and looked really comfortable on the ball. I still don't see Ireland, despite what we might like to say, I don't see Ireland as a comfortable in possession team.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're ranked 24th in the world for a reason. They are a developing team when it comes to, you know, the big leagues in women's football, and they're progressing well. I think it's really interesting to see how teams manage these friendly games, because we've had such important fixtures nearly in every window now since the World Cup and leading up to the World Cup, that it was interesting to see how teams managed with the weight off. You look at England. England kind of went the other direction and kind of flourished under that less stress, I guess. Ireland, on the other hand, it seemed to kind of, the wheels came off a little bit, maybe, you know, and you have to factor in things like injuries and that kind of thing as well. For me, it's a little bit of an anomaly, but I think Ireland work better under pressure. Yeah. And I think that's what we've seen from them in the last kind of year, 18 months.
Yeah. A game which is tight, pressurised. They're a hard-nosed team, full of character, hardworking.
Underdog. Yeah.
A little bit of that. And like, I'm not saying they can't put passages together, but just in that, maybe you're quite right to bring up the friendly aspect, pressure off in that environment. Oh, let's stroke it about and showboat a touch. I don't feel at this level they have that in their locker just yet, if I'm being honest. That's harsh, but I don't see it.
No, I agree. Look, as I you know, refer to their ranking, but you've also got to factor in the teams are going to be coming up against as well. Are going to give you no time on the ball. You know, you're not going to have time to kind of play a pass maybe a metre too long. It has to be perfect against these teams when you're going forward. And it will be a massive learning curve for them. But I think, I know I keep touching on it, but like the benefit of knowing that it's not all over should you come bottom is huge. So I think they can look at these games, look at what they can learn from these games, really test themselves against the best. Because should they qualify, you're not going to hopefully come up against three teams in the top 10 in a group.
No.
So it will be a massive learning experience, but it will be a tough one.
There's almost a parallel here with that period under Pau, where she embarked on a really tough run of friendlies and it culminated with that result against Australia. And around that time, the press were sort of saying, you know, or like observers were saying, she sort of needs a result here because this is, you know, a tricky run. And Pau was saying, well, we've chosen top level opposition because that's what we have to adjust to. So this is as top level as it gets. So who knows? They might come out the other end of this and it will really have stood to them. That, again, that's the optimistic view of these games.
Yeah, and I think you're also seeing with individual players who are playing professional football now, they're learning the tempo, they're learning how quick they need to be on the ball, they need to be making decisions quickly, their decision-making is changing. That's going to benefit them in their domestic level. I think having this opportunity at international level is another benefit. It's going to, like I say, it's going to be tough, but you're going to be up against teams that force you to think quickly and to make the right decisions quickly or get punished for it. So yeah, look, we're trying to put a silver lining on this, but it is a benefit, right? And this is what happens when you're trying to grow a team and you're trying to get into these big leagues and you're trying to climb up the rankings. You have to pit yourselves against these teams and learn from it.
Yes. So if anyone's tuned in halfway through the conversation and thinks we've lost our mind, the headline news here is, no, it's not good, but we're just trying to find a coping mechanism of sorts. I guess this must, certainly for one of the games, this must bring the Aviva into play.
Oh, it's got to be England. It has to be. And, it, you know, equally, England have to put it on at Wembley. That would be incredible. I think you could sell out an England-Ireland game at the Aviva. I think a lot of England fans would travel. And I think it'd be a really special kind of event and showpiece. And I think it would give Ireland another kind of level to their game as well. We saw how well they played against Northern Ireland. So, yeah, I would really like to see an Ireland-England game at the Aviva.
Yeah, Eileen Gleeson was asked about that. And she's, you know, made the point there are only certain slots available where the Aviva is free as things stand. And obviously we have to see when the fixtures are dotted down for. I'm not sure to what extent there is a degree of bargaining and, well, listen, we'll swap you that one for that one. And we would really like this one for Dublin because the Aviva is free that weekend. So, again, I don't know to what extent all that is worked out via human interaction or just done by a computer and take it or leave it. But it would be nice if it could be done.
Yeah, and I think it should be priority. I think it should be the game they look at to put on there. You know, I saw someone saying that maybe there'll be less interest now because fans think Ireland are just going to get beaten by all these teams. I would argue differently. I think you're getting the third, fourth and fifth best in the world coming to Ireland. That's an exciting thing to capitalise on. So I think it could be a really exciting kind of time in terms of women's football and eyes on the game. But yes, it will be a tough potentially watch at times, but yeah, I just think Aviva's got to be in there somewhere and you kind of have to single out that England game. It's just got to be done.
What are your impressions of Eileen Gleeson thus far, Rachel?
Do you know, I was surprised she took it because she'd seemed so unlikely that she was going to take it. And I think she quite enjoyed having the freedom of maybe knowing that it wasn't going to be permanent and she could kind of flex her muscles a bit and try a few things in the games and when they were in Group B in the Nations League. I feel like it's hard to judge until we come up against some tough opposition that really asks questions in terms of tactics and player, you know, picking players and stuff like that. But happy so far. I think the draw with Italy is good. I kind of hoped that maybe we'd end up with Italy in their group and that wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. But so far so good. But this will be the real test of her mettle now.
And you have that Wales game just as anomaly, Nifahi injury in the warm-up, one of those strange evenings, and maybe a touch of come down after the Italy game.
Yeah, like, you know, Denise O'Sullivan out, Tyler Toland out, Louise Quinn couldn't play the full game, Katie McCabe came off, like a lot of key, not just, you know, in terms of quality, but in terms of leadership. And these games do happen. We've seen it. We've seen it with teams. We've seen it with Spain. Spain lost to Italy in the Nations League, which everyone seems to forget. These games happen. I'd rather they happen when they don't matter, really. So, you know, they can take it on the chin, I suppose.
And do you think Gleeson will ultimately fall back on a back five, whether that's a three and Katie and right back, right wing back, very much pushing on. And you know, they're not all back fives are equal in terms of their approach. But do you think she will ultimately go for that? Or do you suspect she's very determined to have a back four and a more attacking outlook on paper?
I think it's very much what the game calls for. Like, if you look at France, you know, their wingers are so incredibly quick. You're going to need that extra cover at times. They can get you through the middle as well. So, like, I feel like what they're comfortable with would be the most likely way to go against these three opponents. None of those teams are the kind of teams where I feel like you can try something that you're not 100% comfortable with. And having then McCabe kind of being able to push up when necessary with the speed and the intelligence to know when to come back and when to stay back and that kind of thing will be really valuable against these opponents.
Because I really thought on Tuesday, that was, for me, that's like a line through back four with Katie McCabe at left back. She's just too deep. It's too deep a starting position. And if Ireland are, you know, not necessarily having all that much possession, it doesn't give her enough time to bomb on and get involved. We, you know, we potentially lost it before she can. And really, based on Jess Zhu is doing, you want a triangle of Zhu and Denise O'Sullivan and Katie McCabe somewhere in the middle third, ideally a touch higher at times, and almost work around that. I didn't, you know, it's funny, Arsenal had her at right back on over the weekend. I was watching the highlights going, what is going on here? But to be fair, she looked like she was almost doing an inverted John Stones right back type thing. She was getting involved further up the pitch, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, against an opposition like Spurs, it very much allowed her to do that. I remember watching her in that position against Leicester when Leicester went 2-0 up and she just kept getting done. The attacker kept cutting inside and she was kind of spinning in circles trying to get around. So not her, obviously, preferred position.
Yeah.
But she has that versatility and obviously is going to be, despite playing the position she does for Ireland, is key to the attack. So you kind of have to have her in that position that allows her to do both. Because as I said, you're not going to get loads of chances with all of these teams. I think they're all involved. Like they're all, you can score against these teams. Don't get me wrong. I think England have proven that in their Nations League run. Yeah. France, despite not being beaten in the Nations League until the final, didn't look great against Spain in the final. And Sweden, of course, have been quite inconsistent. So I feel like there's goals there. There might not be a lot of them, but we need to know we can take the opportunities when they come.
Mm. Yeah, well, interesting times ahead, to say the very least. Would you dare to say what a reasonable expectation would be from this group?
I'd be pretty pleased with the result in any of the games, to be honest. If we could get points off any of them, I'd be... And it seems mad to be saying, looking at Sweden, but that's purely because of the outcome we had when we played them.
Sweden will take. So we'll take 4 points from Sweden.
Four, God, I was thinking one. No, if we can get, and I hate being like that. I hate sounding like you're negative, but there's a balance of being realistic as well. And I think, yeah, like I say, they are going to look at this as something where they're going to want to get points. Don't get me wrong, but there is a huge learning from it. This is where Ireland want to be. And it's just how they go about using this opportunity. I think I said it last week when I was on, that I just don't want them to go backwards. I don't want them to take their foot off the gas and kind of, you know, not seem as committed and invested from a federation point of view as they appear to be now. So, it's a big ask. It's a tough ask, but it's exciting.
Yes. Well, I think from a federation point of view, if they can't get their teeth into this, and sell this and get excited by this, well then...
You've got some of the best players in the world coming, you know. So, yeah, there's lots to be excited about and coming to watch these games. So that's another positive, let's call it.
Yes. It could, Rachel, what we're saying here is this couldn't have gone any better.
I would have said it couldn't have gone any worse, but sure, there's some good things to take out of it.
Yeah. Okay, well, the draw, not to be overly negative about it, but the draw for the playoffs is on the 19th of July, and those games would happen October, November territory. So that safety net is there and a very real thing and a guaranteed thing. So that's the prism through which I guess we look forward to these tougher games, I suppose.
Yes, and there was a huge benefit in topping the League B group and getting out of League B, because had we stayed in there, it could have been a case of playing a League A team at some point in order to get into the Euros. And I'd much rather have to play a League C or a League B team to do that.
Okay. Agreed. Okay, so still a very realistic chance of making the Euros and good games in the meantime. So again, far from terrible. Thank you so much, Rachel O'Sullivan from Girls on the Ball.
Problem.
Great to talk to you.
You too. Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.